So what do you want for Christmas, little girl?
Santa, all I want for Christmas is to save the planet.
Christmas tree, oh Christmas tree, what's your impact environmentally? Oh Christmas tree, I bought you with my family. Yes, global warming I do fear, but Christmas comes just once a year. Oh Christmas tree, my daughter still won't talk to me. Said I'd buy a plastic tree. She says plastic's poisoning the sea. We live in a condominium, so how's about aluminium? It's been hard under the same roof since she watched An Inconvenient Truth. She says Christmas lights burn too much coal. That's why we're melting the North Pole. She says she wants no gifts at all, so I drag her to the mall. I say, please look for something fun. How's about a BB gun? I buy a blender for our neighbor. She says it's made with child labor. Oh Christmas tree, my daughter still won't talk to me. Ever since my girl turned 10, she's an ovo-lacto-vegetarian. Instead of eggnog and turkey, she wants carrot sticks and tofu jerky. But Christmas Eve, she looks at me, says make sure Santa gets cookies. 'Cause even though she has a cause, she still believes in Santa Claus.
The pleasing season's greetings to you, and welcome at last to Spider on the Web number 83. With my apologies for the long hiatus, and a promise that I will do my best to make it up to you, and soon. That was my good friend, writer, filmmaker, playwright, satirist, and general weirdo Mark Leiren Young, and his longtime accomplice, singer, guitarist, actor, director, videomaker Kevin Crofton. Together they are collectively known as Local Anxiety, probably the most succinct summation of the Canadian zeitgeist I've ever heard, and they have appeared on NPR in the U.S. and on CBC Radio and Canada AM in Canada, and have headlined at most comedy festivals across this frozen land. Their latest wonderfully wacky CD, Green Pieces, is available from cdbaby.com, and I'll be playing you a selection or two from it later on. The topical opening number you just heard is not on that CD, but can also be downloaded from cdbaby.com. So much for the opening music. The first thing to do is to bring you up to date on my own situation and state of mind. How shall I do that? It's now been more than 6 months since Jeannie had to leave the party, and I am slowly, oh, very slowly, getting used to the new normal. It's very much like having a leg cut off. For the first little while, it's the first thing you notice about the universe on awakening, colors every single waking moment, and is the last thing you fall asleep thinking about, that damn missing leg. After enough time has passed, though, it becomes just another part of the background, another one of the collection of aches and pains you've been amassing since you were young and carrying around with you daily ever since, and the empty space where your leg used to be is just like all those empty spaces where missing teeth used to be. Part of life. You stop becoming a guy who's lost his leg and become just another one-legged guy. I go for days at a time without crying now, or at least out loud, and I laugh almost as much as I ever did now, though perhaps not as deeply. And let me tell you about my Christmas present come early, the best one I've gotten in many's the long year. For months now, I've been holding my breath, waiting for the inevitable day when my daughter and son-in-law will be moving away from Bowen Island back to the U.S. to get on with their lives, taking with them the greatest joy left in my life, little Marissa Alegria da Silva, now 17 adorable months old, my crack cocaine. These days, the da Silvas have been what keeps me getting up in the morning, and I am not looking forward to having to cut back to being a Skype grandpa. But there's nothing here for Terry or Heron, and their hearts yearn to be back in New York or some other similarly sizable city in the world, and I know they'll be moving just as soon as Heron gets a job offer he likes enough. That's exactly as it should be. It was heroic enough of them to give up more than a year of their lives to help Jeannie transition in the face of minor complications like birthing a child. I wish them luck and open road. And by the way, if you or someone you know could use an electrical engineer who is smart as a whip, fiercely courageous, fluent in English, Spanish, and Brazilian Portuguese, drop me a line at spiderweb@shaw.ca. Heron got both his degree as an electrical engineer and his green card only days before Jeannie died and is ready to move on with his life. Nor will it be too long before Terry is ready to resume social work and Marissa is ready to let her. So these days, a significant fraction of the total tonnage of paper being hauled around the planet by assorted postal services consists of copies of Heron's resume. But in the present economic climate, Ice Age, it might be another month or two before he gets an offer he likes, and in the meantime, they had to vacate the nearby place they were renting by the end of this month. And here I am with this all-too-empty house 5 minutes away. So these days, when I pry open my eyes and lurch out of the bedroom, there's my grandchild in the living room. And someone else has made coffee and oatmeal or waffle batter or eggs. And the house rings with conversation and music and a child's laughter, the whole barrel of monkeys. I had figured to utterly blow off Christmas this year. Jeannie and I had long since tired of it, down to an artificial Christmas tree. I just didn't have the strength, and if it isn't shared, what is it anyway? But now I have a real Christmas tree in my living room, for the first time in maybe a decade, and it is decorated magnificently, cheerfully, joyously, except for the parts Marissa can reach, which are decorated randomly. And beneath it are presents, several of which Marissa has not opened yet, and it's beginning to look a lot like Christmas. So I think it is only right and proper that I offer a few Christmas presents to you, my long-suffering, loyal listeners, forgiving fans, and fellow insomniacs. If you are listening to this, then you've been extremely patient with me, and I really appreciate that. So how about if I lay on you an unreleased demo by David Crosby, heard here for the first time anywhere, of a track from an as-yet-untitled new solo album he's been working up lately with his brilliant son, James Raymond? No, how about this? How about three of them? Plus a rare live recording from 1970 of the song that David was inspired to write by the novels of Robert A. Heinlein. Now we're getting there. Then, for a lagniappe, suppose I throw in a pod shop, that is, a 90-minute writer's workshop in the form of a podcast. Now wait, why don't I give you three of them, too, spread out between now and New Year's, while you might have a little downtime from work or school or crime or whatever to devote to auditing a writer's workshop series. Now what do you say?
Hey, fat man, you know one of your goddamn reindeer just took a dump on my kitchen skylight? What are you going to do about that, huh?
Without further ado, you probably don't care if I do or I don't, here is the first of our three world's premieres, I'm counting the entire solar system, including the asteroid belt, by one of the kindest men I've ever met, as well as the best male singer alive, Mr. David Crosby. This is a raw home demo of one of his newest songs, Shot at Me.
Having coffee in my favorite place, when this haunted guy with a haunted face said he just got back from the Middle East. So I said, what's it really like in the belly of the beast? And he said, you got to walk on water and float on land and go to sleep where you make your bed and make your bed where you won't get hit and hide your fire but keep it lit. Burn the stuff that you can't use. Make a map that you can't lose. Head for the woods and laugh all the way. Nobody shout at me today. So I said to him, you have quite a time trying to find a place to ease your mind. And it must feel good to be home free and get right back to where you used to be. And he said, you got to find your lifeline. Tell your story before you're dead and try making sense and then give up. It'll come to you right when you stop. Burn the stuff that you can't use. Make a map that you can't lose. Head for the woods and laugh all the way. Nobody shot at me today.
Between digging the awesome lyrics, did you happen to hear that guitar, brothers and sisters? That's an early 60s icon in his own late 60s, and he's still inventing new ways of approaching those same six strings the rest of us use. A little bit later on, I'll play you another one with an even more amazing guitar part. But right now, let's hop on our time machine and travel backwards 47 years to the early 60s, specifically 1963.
We'd like to take the opportunity of wishing everybody a very happy Kringle from all of us and say thank you to everyone who sent in all the cards this week and all the other weeks. I'd like to say, I hope you have, all of you, have a happy Christmas and a very happy New Year.
Something eerie even for time travel. We're going to simultaneously travel 3 years backwards and 50 years forward. On August 17, 1960, the Beatles played their first set in Hamburg, Germany, at Bruno Kaschmitter's Indra Club. 50 years later to the day, a group calling itself Bambino, after the porno theater where the lads slept after the gig that night, played the Indra and performed the Beatles' entire repertoire of that period brilliantly. Here they are now with the number they chose for their closer on August 17th, 2010. They are Ira Elliott, drums and vocals. Honest to God, his name is Eric Paparazzi on bass and vocals. And Mark Razzo or Razzo and Doug Gillard or Gillard on guitar and vocals, collectively known as Bambino. All right, lads, Mark Shaw.
1, 2, 3, 4. Thank you. Thank you.
You can score a whole album by Bambikino at bambikino.com. Now we slam the time machine into pure first gear and race ahead to what I fondly hope is the far distant future, post-nuclear fairy tale, by tonight's opening act, Local Anxiety.
Once upon a time, there was a man named Adam and a woman named Eve, and they lived in a garden.
What's a garden?
It's a place with flowers and trees.
Like a biosphere.
Exactly. And in Adam and Eve's biosphere of Eden, there was every kind of animal in the world.
Doggies, cats, cows, chickens, pigs, and rats.
There were even more animals than that.
Cockroaches aren't an animal. They're a bug. Same with ants. That's what my mommy says. Bugs aren't animals.
There were lots of animals.
Everybody knows there's only six kinds of animals. Doggies, cats, cows, chickens, pigs, and rats.
Just pretend there were other kinds.
Like mutants? Mutants?
Oh, okay, don't cry. There were all six animals.
In the same biosphere? That's not legal.
It was then.
Cool.
And in the garden, there were these beautiful trees.
Did they bite?
No. Back then, trees didn't bite.
Freaky!
And on the tree was an apple.
Who put it there?
It grew there.
Apples don't grow on trees. You use gene splicing and put them in a polymer bath.
They used to grow on trees.
Apples on trees? You're weird, Uncle Kevin.
Just pretend.
Right? Apples on trees.
And there were deep oceans filled with millions of catfish and sharks.
And apples, right?
There were no apples in the ocean.
Well, I figure if they're on trees.
And Adam and Eve were outside, and they weren't wearing anything, and they were...
Dead.
No, they weren't dead.
If they were outside without a radiation suit, they were dead.
And a snake told Eve to eat the apple.
What's a snake?
Okay, a rat told Eve to eat the apple.
Oh, yeah, like a rat would share food.
And Eve ate the apple.
Did she check it with her Geiger counter first?
No.
So she died. This is a terrible story.
She did not die.
She ate something from outside. She didn't use her Geiger counter, and I bet she didn't even check for residual pesticides. She's dead!
And then the voice of God came from the sky.
What's a sky?
Well,
And then what happened?
They all died. The end.
That's a lousy story. Tell me the one about Noah's dinghy.
As you can see, it's long past time some smart science fiction convention invited Local Anxiety to come perform. Another instant 180 bootlegger turn on the old time machine will take us hurtling back to the Fillmore in 1970.
Fillmore East or Fillmore West? I don't know.
Where David Crosby is even now laying down a gorgeous solo performance of the Heinlein-inspired song that is said to have helped get him kicked out of the Byrds. The first guitar part I ever memorized. Triad.
It's no good. It's like a short circuit. I tried everything, man. No, if I was gonna go, I wouldn't go that way. I'd probably go more this way. You want to know how it will be. Me and her, oh, you and me. You both stand there with your long hair flowing. Your eyes are alive and your minds are still growing. Saying to me, you are afraid. And there is too. No one has ever, in your sweet short life, child, said such a thing to you. Your mother's ghost stands at your shoulder. She's got a face like ice, but just a little bit colder, saying you cannot do that, it breaks all the rules you learned in the schools. But I don't really see why can't we go on as three? We love each other. It's plain to see. There's just one answer. Comes very naturally to me. Sister lovers, you people must know about what a brother. And in time, maybe a lot of other. So you see, what we can do is to try. Ooh, yeah, that is if you're crazy too. I don't really see why can't we go on as friends.
Now, yet another bootlegger turn in time brings us back to the day after tomorrow. A much newer and much darker story from the same great storyteller. Our second world premiere of this podcast. And once again, I call your attention to the astonishingly original guitar part. It's so unlike anything I've ever heard come out of a guitar before, with progressions completely new to me, that I simply assumed it was in one of David's trademark weird open string tunings, open H or something. But I was wrong. It's standard tuning. Eadgibbe, E-A-D-G-B-E. Don't ask me where he found so many novel yet seemingly inevitable things to do with it. This is a rough demo of David Crosby's haunting new song, If She Called.
She grinds her hips, maybe arches her back. There's nobody there to see when she's doing that. The guy's not there, he just doesn't exist. She's looking at him, space when she's doing this. She might walk home, she's kind of tired, or spend some of the money on a cab she's hired. bus groans by and splashes a man. He swears at a drunkard's curse on the whole damned world. She smiles at that and then starts to cry. She scrubs at a spot on her leg and then lets it dry. And she's sitting on the floor with her head hung down. Listening to another language on TV. Unaware, hair unbound. Wondering where her mother and father might be. If she called, if she called, she dreams, don't we all dream? A place, a way, a recurring. She remembers a time when love was alive. But somehow it gets lost in the sound of the city's morning drive. Lost in the sound of the city's roaring morning drive.
Let's listen to that one.
Now a couple of numbers that feature the striking and diverse talents of David's son, singer-composer-keyboardist James Raymond. Neither he nor David knew of their relationship until James was a grown man and David was dying of liver failure. But it's quite clear Mr. and Mrs. Raymond did an outstanding job of raising and cherishing a musical prodigy. Their son is a truly sweet man, an all-too-rare quality in a talent his size. Here he is in Brescia, Italy, in 1998, backed by his sire and guitar god Jeff Pivar in their all-too-short-lived trio CPR, Crosby, Pivar, Raymond. This is James's mature-beyond-his-years take on the musician's lot, life on the road, perpetually lying down to sleep in somebody else's town.
Thank you.
James in a different mood altogether, live at the Jazz Garden in L.A. with his tight and tasty quartet, Lit by Fireflies, instrumentally illuminating a Joni Mitchell song that David tackled as a vocal at least twice on his own solo album, A Thousand Roads, and later with CPR. In yet another world premiere, James Raymond and Lit by Fireflies herewith explore Yvette in English.
Thank you.
Lit by Fireflies consists of reed man Steve Tavaglione and the rhythm section from CPR, drummer Stevie DeSanislau and bassist Andrew Ford, longtime recidivist associates of James. They are all currently said to be working up an entire album of classic David Crosby material considered from a jazz perspective. Quote, his songs really lend themselves to exploring, unquote, James says on his website, jamesraymond.com. Quote, he'll call himself a folky or a folk rocker, but he's really got a jazz element that he's not even aware of, unquote. I, for one, am dying to hear the results. Okay, now, before we let David and James take a first pass together at another Joni Mitchell song, let me try and briefly riff out for you an apexegesis Christ of the fundamental flaws behind the whole hog half-assed idea of Spider's Pod Shop, the workshop that comes in the form of a podcast. I just now finished, okay, have nearly finished, a term of proud and voluntary servitude as the Vancouver Public Library's sixth writer-in-residence, thank you, George and Dean. Part of my duties involved mentoring individual writers for an hour at a time in an extremely comfortable office at the library's downtown branch itself. Each customer submitted a short writing sample for me to read, and then we would talk about it, and I would try to answer any questions and tell useful war stories. But I don't know if you've ever seen, or at least seen photos of, the Vancouver Public Library's main downtown branch. It looks so much like a Star Trek set that when they asked me to move in, I felt compelled to offer them something at least a wee bit futuristic as part of my residence. And with a bit of research, I learned that, at least as far as I can tell, nobody has ever before hit upon the idea of holding a writer's workshop in the form of a podcast. I proposed the idea, and the VPL's Community Relations Director, Sophie Middleton, liked it. I was partly inspired by the fact that in the past year, three different science fiction conventions have been compassionate enough to let Jeannie and me, and or just me, attend as their virtual guest of honor by Skype. In each case, both sides found it far more pleasant and enjoyable than we'd expected, meeting without all the bother and expense of arranging for our meat selves to be in the same location. For my part, as a lazy man, I was fundamentally attracted to the idea of a workshop I could attend at 3 a.m, in my underwear, secure in the comforting knowledge that no matter how enraged disappointed students might become, I was not there to be assaulted. So we tried it 3 times, and to my mild surprise and vast relief, it worked so well that not only has nobody demanded their money back, in all fairness nobody paid a cent, but the majority of them seemed determined to keep meeting on their own on a monthly basis. I've even heard wild talk about naming the thing Spider's Pod, but I'm sure Budweiser heads will prevail. I deliberately kept the format as simple as I could, knowing it would instantly complicate itself just fine, thank you. Here's the lick. Each time I would open by reading aloud 4 writing samples submitted by students, one after the other. Each of the other students would then bombard me with emails commenting on each of that workshop's 4 manuscripts. I would read the comments all aloud in sequence, then add my own 2 cents worth on each story, poem, novel, excerpt, or whatever the case might be. Then I would try to close with some general and specific OG advice on how to improve one's chances of trading one's special mixes of common public domain words for samples of that most graceful, eloquent prose poem, Pay to the Order Of. So astonishingly well did the whole thing turn out, in fact, that when I asked, nobody had any objection to my rerunning all 3 Spider's Pod Shops here for your edification as episodes of Spider on the Web, and that is exactly what I propose to do. I will ask Colin to post Podshop number 1 on Christmas Day itself, roughly 6 days after I'm recording this. 6 days after that, on New Year's Day, I'll post Podshop number 2, and on January 7th, good Lord willin' and the creek don't rise, I'll put up the 3rd and final Podshop. And just to keep you on your toes, at some unplanned, unannounced, and unpredictable point in that sequence, basically whenever the hell the spirit moves me, I plan to post a special treat, an invitation to a private party at my place, tottering on the brink, Bowen Island, B.C., which took place last October 3rd. It was the first celebration of any kind to be held in my home since Jeannie moved out, and it was a truly memorable icebreaker. 1.5 hours of stunning live music, live in my living room, performed by my esteemed webmaster Colin McDonald and his remarkable bride Andrea for a carefully chosen audience of nearly a dozen friends and neighbors and relatives here on Bowen Island. I only wish I could give you an equally large sample of the astonishing boatload of ferociously delicious Balinese chicken curry Andrea and Colin served up for an encore, but I just now finished up the last of the lovely frozen leftovers. Sorry, Squire. It was not the first time I've had the privilege of hearing Colin and Andrea play live in my living room by any means, and as they did this time, from force of habit, I kept feeling Jeannie standing just behind me, her hands on either side of my neck, communicating her pleasure at the surprises of the music and her love for me, for us, with almost imperceptible movements of her fingertips. The evening was a special healing magic gift from special spiritual friends, one I will always treasure, and I am very grateful that my MacBook Pro made it possible to record it for the holiday enjoyment of those of you who aren't particularly interested in auditing 5 or 6 hours of writer talk. So keep your ears on this space for the unpredictable but estimable and ineluctable podcast debut of two of Jeannie's and my closest, kindest friends, Colin and Andrea McDonald, performing together on recorders, saxophone, and assorted other noise-making devices. Now, with our final world premiere of this podcast, are David Crosby and James Raymond taking a first pass together at another splendid, too-little-known Joni Mitchell song. My deepest thanks to both David and James for allowing me to bring you all these special Christmas goodies. And my special thanks to Jean Cavanaugh and Sophie Middleton of the Vancouver Public Library, both for giving me a task to keep me sane in the horrid months after Jeannie's departure, and for graciously allowing me to share it with you here in the weeks to come. Now here are David and James with a song addressed to someone even later to the party than I am, Ms. Earhart herself, Amelia.
I was driving across the burning desert when I spotted 6 jet planes leaving 6 white vapor trails across the bleak terrain. It was the hexagram of the heavens. It was the strings of my guitar. Amelia, it was just a false alarm. The drone of flying engines is a song so wild and blue. It scrambles time and the seasons if it gets through to you. And then your life becomes a traveler, a picture postcard charm. Amelia was just a false alarm. Yourself you will never really know. Where some have found their paradise, others just come to harm. Oh, Amelia, it was just a false alarm. That she was here tonight. It's so hard to obey her sad request of me to kindly stay away. So this is how I hide the hurt as the road leads. it's cursed and charmed. I tell Amelia it was just a false alarm. Coast of aviation, she was swallowed by the sky. Oh, by the sea, like me, she had a dream to fly. Like Icarus ascending on beautiful, foolish arms. Amelia, it was just a false alarm. I've never really loved. I guess that is the truth. I've spent my whole life in clouds at icy altitude. And looking down on everything, I crashed into her arms. Oh, Amelia, it was just a false alarm. The cactus tree molded to shower off the dust, and I slept on the strange pillows of my wanderlust. I dreamed of 747s over geometric farms. Dreams, Amelia, dreams, false alarm.
Thank you all once again for putting up with my long silence. Now that I've broken a bit of the ice, I hope you'll consider coming back here after you've finished clearing away all the wrapping paper on Christmas Day for the first of three writers' pod shops, and the delicious prospect of an evening's entertainment by my zany, zenny friends, Vancouver's musical McDonald's, Colin and Andrea. Meaningless coincidence number 6,073, Robert A. Heinlein's second father-in-law, Leslin's dad, was also named Colin MacDonald. To take us home now, here once more is David Crosby with a short but unforgettable track from one of the highest peaks in his remarkable recording career to date, the 2004 double album Crosby Nash. It's a little Japanese-flavored meditation on fathers and sons, a kind of a cappella hauta on which he is briefly joined at the end by his spirit son James and by his oldest friend, the great Graham Nash. Here is Samurai.
Spirit son of a samurai, tilting at windmills, a misfit in this century. He was looking for a living to be proud of. Well, he was driven before a dozen winds at once, like a salmon jumping upstream without the fish's sense not to wander.
Well, he was carrying his baggage, chained to his feet, his weapon held across his eyes. He was looking for the light. He was looking for the light. Well, he was the only one I met on the road last night.